You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the U.S. House is scheduled to vote this week on whether to impeach a president for just the third time in history. We talk about the final committee hearings before that vote and what to expect next. First, we think about winter, the holidays, the weather, the moods. What songs do we have to go along with our snowy state of mind? Folk musicians from all backgrounds have their own winter stories to tell about how the season makes them feel. WPR's Dan Robinson is the host of the show Simply Folk, and he has some great seasonal music to share with us. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Rob. It's great to be here.
Before we get into some of your specific recommendations, is this a great time of year for people to write folk songs? A lot of inspiration out there?
Oh, gosh, yes. You know, I was just putting the show together for this coming Sunday when we have a lot of holiday music on there, and trying to pare down all the music, the great music out there into a three-hour show is like trying to fit 10 pounds of flour in a one-pound bag. It's just, there's just a lot of great songs out there.
Do you see particular themes coming up in the music as you try to sift and winnow, as we say in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with, obviously, the winter season as a backdrop for the holidays up here in Wisconsin. We've been having winter now for, what, like 5 months already, I think, something like that. And so you'll see that come through a lot in the songs, the winter solstice, that winter time. But then also in terms of, like, say, Hanukkah or Christmas or even music for Kwanzaa, I think that sense of community, relationship, family, connection, all that comes through pretty strongly in the music.
All right, let's get into some music now. You gave us a big list, and you just mentioned winter solstice. That's right around the corner. Let's check out one track you shared, In the Dark by Katie Dahl off the album Wildwood.
It's that time of year when it's hard to say what's being born again, what is dying. It's that time of year, brightest stars and the darkest days, woman heavy on a bed of straw, the cattle crying.
Tell us a little bit about Katie Dahl in this song, Dan.
Well, first off, Katie's a great musician, and she's from Door County. We love to highlight Wisconsin artists on Simply Folk. And this, as you mentioned, is off her new album, Wildwood. Just came out with that this year. She performs with her husband, Rich Higdon. And she wrote the song when they were expecting their first child. And so the song has that wonderful sense of anticipation. I love that line. It's hard to tell, you know, what is dying and what's coming forth right now. It's that sort of that in-between time. And I think that comes through beautifully in the music. I love her guitar playing in that. And just the whole album is just a really great album. And like I said, we feature her music on Simply Folk quite a bit.
Now, as opposed to Christmas carols, I think a lot of folk music for this time of year might have a little more of a bittersweet edge to it. Not that wholehearted embrace of the season necessarily.
Well, you know, I think it has both. Certainly, there's a lot of songs out there that say, you know what, this isn't necessarily all jingle bells and Christmas cookies and stuff, because it is. One of the things I love about folk music is the honesty behind it. Yes, you know, there are some songs that try to emphasize the positive, but they also take an honest look at life and even the little details of life. And I think that song we just heard from Katie Dahl, that idea of her expecting that child, that thing that's you know, the most ordinary thing in the world and yet so special, and yet so folk music sort of captures that mood. And I think it does it with Christmas as well.
Let's hit winter solstice again before we move on to Christmas. This is Mary Chapin Carpenter off of a 12 Songs of Christmas album, Come Darkness, Come Light. The song is The Longest Night of the Year.
You stare into the firelight while December beats outside, where the darkest hearts reside on the longest night of the year. So keep me safe and hold me tight, let the candle burn all night, tomorrow welcome back the light. It was the longest.
Now, Mary Chapin Carpenter, one of the bigger names on the list you sent along to us, Dan.
Well, I love the mood in this song, what it projects. I mean, it just makes you want to curl up in a blanket in front of a fire. Now, in my house, I'd have to be in front of the TV or the computer, but hey, you know, it's still the same.
Light
the
a
same
candle,
vibe.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Light the candle. But that warmth comes through in that song, I think, so well.
Let's move on to just some seasonal weather songs. As you say, winter started a little early here this year. We've had some snow. You sent us a couple snow-themed songs, both the same name, I think. First, Let It Snow by Rhonda Vincent from Beautiful Star.
And the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go.
So a twist there on the carol, Let It Snow. Do folk musicians often tackle those standards?
Oh, gosh, yes. There's a lot of versions of that song, for example, out there. And, you know, that's a pretty straightforward bluegrass version of that. And she does a great, great job with that song, I think. The other version that I gave you was from a Madison-based duo of Eric Chelland and Beth Kelly. They perform as Kerosene Kites. And I love their take on that song. And it's kind of fun to play those kind of back-to-back to hear the difference in their version of it.
Yeah, let's take a shot at that Kerosene Kites take on Let It Snow.
Outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Well, they definitely changed the rhythm and cadence of the song there.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you mentioned how to pair the number of songs down into our show or into your – I always had a hard time pairing that song down. I just love their version of that. I wish we could have played the whole thing, but, you know, we don't have time for that. But it's they do a great job with that. And it, like I said, it's fun to kind of compare and contrast the two takes on that song.
Well, now I don't want to put any sneaky plugs in here, but might someone be able to listen to a full version of that on the next edition of Simply Folk?
Well, you know, I thought you should mention that. But actually, not the next one, but on the 29th.
Okay. We're
going to do a little winter, some snow songs in there. So I'd encourage, no promises, but I'd encourage the listeners to tune in on the 29th. I think you might hear that song.
Talking to Dan Robinson from WPR's Simply Folk. He's sharing some great music of the season with us. Well, let's turn to Christmas now. We've got a song from the trenches here, a World War I Christmas song by John McCutcheon, Christmas in the Trenches.
I was lying with my messmate on the cold and rocky ground, when across the lines of battle came a most peculiar sound. Says I, now listen up, me boys, each soldier strained to hear, as one young German voice sang out so clear. He's singing bloody well, you know, my partner says to me. Soon one by one each German voice joined in harmony. The cannons rest.
So the story there, Dan, I imagine, of the famous Christmas truce from early in World War I.
Yeah, in 1914, along the Western Front in Europe, small little ceasefires broke out during Christmas Eve that year, with German and Allied soldiers sharing food and drink, swapping prisoners and the bodies of the deceased, and sharing in some holiday cheer. And there's a lot of songs out there that have their take on that. But that's one of my favorite by John McCutcheon. I love his voice, and I love it, the story that he tells in that the soldiers are brought together by singing.
And a lot of great storytelling traditions, of course, in folk music. And the holidays bring out some of that, too.
Oh, gosh, yes, absolutely. And I think one of the songs that you might have there is The Christmas Ship by Lee Murdoch, which is, again, we like to emphasize Wisconsin musicians or Wisconsin stories. And this is a great story there. The Rouse Simmons was a ship that sailed in the late 1800s and early 1900s, bringing lumber from the upper peninsula of Michigan to Chicago. And on the last run of the season in November, it would bring a load of Christmas trees to the German population in Chicago. And in the night of November 23rd to the 24th in 1912, it sank with all hands lost off the shore of two rivers. And the captain was Herman Schunemann, but the story goes on with his wife continuing the Christmas tree tradition for many years after that. It's a great take on that story.
Let's give a listen to Lee Murdoch and the Christmas Ship.
Oh, Papa, come look. Oh, Mama, can you see? I've been waiting for so long for this to come to be. Oh, Papa, come look. Oh, Mama, can't you see? Here comes the...
the Christmas ship.
Talking to Dan Robinson, host of WPR Simply Folk, about folk songs for the winter season and the holidays. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite folk artist or song you like to listen to, especially when the temperatures drop, the snow falls, maybe at a holiday gathering of some sort? Let us know. If you have a question for Dan about the artist we've heard so far or who he might recommend for you, join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Dan Robinson is with us, host of WPR Simply Folk, talking about folk music for winter and the holidays. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have any favorite artists who wrote great winter-themed folk music or a favorite song in particular? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dan, we had some recommendations on Facebook already. Dave, and you found some of the songs for us. Dave writes the Swedish band Triakel, and the song Dave recommends is Christmas Song. Here's a listen.
God morgon, kära fader, fredeliga män. Gud låter vakna glader, ingen dag redan, ingen dag kylelsen.
Dan, I don't speak Swedish, but this one sounds pretty upbeat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this one is from our archives. You know, Simply Folk's been around for 40 years. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary, and we have a number of recordings in our archives from here in Wisconsin. And that one was from a performance back in 2000 by Triakel. And it's a Stafensvisa, which is a traditional type of Swedish song, and it talks about or sings about young people traveling around the village asking for food and drink, kind of a wassail kind of thing, only in Sweden. So, yeah, it's kind of a fun song.
Well, from Sweden, let's turn to Mexican and Latin American traditions. Set this one up for us, a song by Gabby Moreno.
Yeah, so this is off her album Posada. And Las Posadas is a Mexican tradition, the days leading up to Christmas, when a couple in the community will visit a different house each night, reenacting the journey in the Christian scriptures of Mary and Joseph looking for lodging before the birth of Jesus. And so the song we're going to hear a clip from is titled Hacia Belén va una burra rin rin, and it means a donkey is going to Bethlehem rin rin. And part of the lyrics are the donkey carries its chocolate pot. I was mending, I mended, I put a patch on, I took it off. The donkey carries its chocolate whisk in its stove. Mary, Mary, come running here, for it's eating the chocolate. And this is a traditional Christmas song in Mexico.
Lleva su chocolatera, rin, rin. Yo me remendaba, yo me remendé. Yo me eché un remiendo, yo me lo quité. Su molinillo y su anafre. María, María, ven acá corriendo. El chocolatillo se lo están comiendo. María, María, ven acá corriendo. El chocolatillo se lo están comiendo.
Well, those two last two remind me, Dan, the challenge that faces you in putting together a holiday show, not just American folk music. You've got a whole planet to choose from here.
Well, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches, I guess. I mean, it's a nice challenge to have. And I tell you, I love that song. I love the rhythm and how it carries you forward. It's just really energetic, and I think it's real celebratory. So it's fun to play those songs from different traditions.
Well, before we move on to some other holidays of the season, I want to go back to some that our listeners suggested on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Ruth, who suggested the song Chickadee by Manxon, Hills, and Herdman. Here's a taste of that.
We've got tea and clover, honey, fresh baked bread to warm our day. Stack of wood and a hissing fire to keep the cold winds at bay. Chickadee, chickadee, chickadee-dee, singing in the sleeping trees. Chickadee, chickadee, chickadee-dee, soon they will be waking.
Well, I don't know where to go with that one. They keep switching back and forth from that minor key to the major key, Dan. Is this going to be a happy song?
Yeah, no, it's an upbeat song. And one of the things I love about Simply Folk, we know we have our monthly listener request show, and inevitably somebody's going to request a song, or more than one person, that I'm not familiar with. And this was a new one to me. And it's a great song. I love that trio, Herdman, Hills, and Manx, and we play them quite a bit on the show. But it was a new track for me, and it was fun to get that and to listen to that because I love their harmonies.
Yeah, you've got quite a community over there on Simply Folk, making requests and learning things from you as well.
Oh, the Simply Folk community is absolutely wonderful. I feel like we are so fortunate on WPR and Simply Folk to have the listeners that we have, and then pitching in each month to request a song and just a little pitch myself. You know, there's still room on the playlist. We always have it on the second Sunday of the month, and this coming would be January 12th. So if you go to simplyfolk.org, there's a form on the website where you can send in your own request. And if we can play that during the show, we will.
Getting some great music advice, folk music for the winter season with Dan Robinson from Simply Folk. You can hear the full show Sunday evenings on the Ideas and NPR and News and Classical Music Networks from 5 to 8 p.m. or stream it if you want at WPR.org. Let's move on to Hanukkah. You shared a song there. Tell us before we listen about Light by Lisa Loeb.
Yeah, well, it's known as the Festival of Lights, and it commemorates the victory of the Maccabeans over the empire of their time and the rededication of the temple there in Jerusalem. And it starts on December 22nd and goes until the 30th. So this coming Sunday, we'll have some music for Hanukkah. And this song is a contemporary singer-songwriter kind of piece by Lisa Loeb. And I just love the feel of the song, and it's just a beautiful piece.
Let's give a listen. Light by Lisa Loeb.
Six, seven, eight, night, celebrate our light. Lie, 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 lie.
It's got to be a challenge for a folk musician, Dan. Do I go back to an old standard and put my own spin on it, or do I come up with a new treatment of the same themes?
Well, there doesn't seem to be any lack of inspiration for musicians because we get a lot of both. I mean, it's if you listen to the show, you'll know that we try to emphasize both the contemporary and the traditional, and I think a lot of folk musicians do that as well. You know, you'll get something like Rhonda Vincent doing a fairly straightforward take of Let It Snow, and then you get something like the Kerosene Kites who will say, "Hey, let's put a really unique twist on that." And it's kind of fun to see both of those movements in the music.
Now, Kwanzaa coming up also, and you've got a selection here from us by Sweet Honey and the Rock, another big name from their album Selections, 1976 to 1988. This is called Seven Principles.
Umoja,
unity that brings us together.
Umoja,
unity that brings us together.
Sweet Honey and the Rock, a pretty familiar name, Dan.
Yeah, that's a great piece. It goes through the seven principles of Kwanzaa. Those first two that we heard were unity and self-determination, and they go on to sing about work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. And it's a great way. I always try to play that song for Kwanzaa every year because it kind of lays out those seven principles. And like a lot of holidays, there's a lot of layers to Kwanzaa as well, but those seven principles are a big piece of that. And hey, you can't go wrong with Sweet Honey and the Rock.
I want to go back to our listeners' suggestions here from our Ideas Network Facebook page. June writes, Patchouli, a.k.a. Terra Guitarra. Was this one you knew?
Oh, yeah. We play Patchouli quite a bit on the show.
Okay.
It's a Wisconsin-based duo of Bruce Hexel and Julie Patchouli. And they perform actually under both names. Patchouli is when they sort of emphasize the singer-songwriter side of things, and Terra Guitarra is when they emphasize the instrumental and guitar playing. Bruce is just a wonderful guitarist. And I think we got a track titled Thanksgiving from them, right?
Let's see. Now, And I think an instrumental like that will serve any season pretty much, Dan, or any holiday.
Well, you know, you can't go wrong with the theme of Thanksgiving, no matter what time of year it is, right?
And one more. Now, we've got New Year's, of course, coming around the corner. Speaking of your embarrassment of riches there. You tell us about the song you picked for us for New Year's.
Yeah, this one's titled Hazel's House. It's by Richard Schindel, who's a pretty well-known, been around a long time as a singer-songwriter in the folk community. And I love this song because of the warm picture it paints, you know, of loved ones gathering for a New Year's party at Hazel's house.
Okay, here's Alyssa and Richard Schindel, Hazel's House.
It's New Year's and the place is overflowing. Cousins, aunts, and uncles gather round. How long has it been? It's great to see you. How you've grown. And the uncles all have one eye on the rose bowl. One by one they slink back to the den. Everybody else heads for the kitchen. You go with them.
Hazel's House by Richard Schindel. Let's bring on a caller before we run out of time. Jim is with us in Stevens Point. Jim, hi.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Dan. Just a couple of holiday albums. One's an instrumental album from Dan Crary. It's called Holiday Guitar. Came out in 1997 on Sugar Hill, and it's just a great guitar holiday album. And Sofia Talvik is a Swedish singer-songwriter. And in 2017, she came up with an album entitled When Winter Comes. And they're both great albums to spend a night listening to.
Well, thanks, Jim, for that. And I did not know about the holiday guitar one, but funny you should mention Sofia Talvik, because we are going to play a track from that album on our show this Sunday. So you have great taste.
Fantastic, Jim. Thanks so much for calling. Dan, as we wrap up, anything you're really looking forward to, holiday or not, in 2020?
Well, it's always kind of fun to see the new CDs roll in after the turn of the year, and particularly their take on, as we talked about, some of the traditional tunes and some of the twists that they take on those. And so, yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to the new music that's going to come out with the new year.
Dan, thanks again for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rob. Love talking.
That's Dan Robinson, host of WPR's Simply Folk. We talked to him today about folk music inspired by the winter season. You can hear Simply Folk Sunday evenings on The Ideas and NPR News and Classical Networks from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Again, Sunday evenings from 5 to 8. Coming up, we'll look at the final House committee hearing ahead of tomorrow's potential vote on impeaching President Trump. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on The Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show, from Wisconsin to Antarctica, the author of the new book, The Painted Forest, talks about the stories we tell about the places we live. That's tomorrow morning at 6 here on The Ideas Network. Now, the House Rules Committee is meeting today to finalize the two articles of impeachment against President Trump and set up a vote on impeachment in the full House scheduled for tomorrow. Democrats and Republicans went back and forth on the fairness of the process so far and whether the president's actions constitute impeachable conduct. Tomorrow will be just the third time in American history that the House would vote on whether to impeach a president. Eric Giordano is an associate professor of political science for the UW Colleges and founding director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service based in Wausau. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I think people in the public don't generally lose a lot of sleep thinking about what the House Rules Committee does, but they are in the limelight today, aren't they?
They are, but you're right. They shouldn't lose any sleep over this. This is really just, you know, additional political theater in preparation for the vote on the articles of impeachment, which will begin tomorrow, the debate and vote. However, there is one really important thing that the House Rules Committee has to do, and that is they have to determine the rule for the debate on the floor of the House that begins tomorrow, as well as the procedures for voting and other things like whether or not to allow amendments and when and how and who can speak. So there are some important things that the committee has to do, but to date, to this moment, it has not done any of that. It's been more sort of a theater around who's right, around the fairness of the process, as well as the actual substance of the articles themselves.
Right. This is not a step that's going to stop or make the impeachment process succeed. It's just setting the ground rules for who can say what when, basically leading up to the vote. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct. And I don't want to dismiss that or diminish it, because that is significant, right? I mean,
right.
This is political theater in the extreme, and both sides need to come out of this looking as if they have won. And how do they do this, right? The Democrats need to come across looking as solemn, as dignified, as fair, and as independent. And of course, the Republicans want to cast aspersions on the fairness of the process and make it seem as if this is a complete partisan witch hunt. So there is a lot at stake here, and the rules will matter in terms of, you know, how well the Democrats can control the argument and the debate.
Now, before we get into how they made those arguments a little more and what happens next, there is maybe, I imagine, a teachable moment here, civics in action. This is the kind of thing that might happen on any kind of bill, no matter how mundane, this kind of rule setting in a legislative body.
Exactly. In fact, the rules that are going to be set here are very similar in a way to the as rules are set for any debate on any piece of legislation. And actually, this is a little different, because in the last impeachment hearing for President Clinton, they actually didn't have to set the rules through the Rules Committee. There was a special resolution that came immediately out of the Judiciary Committee. And it was agreed to by unanimous consent. And so those rules were negotiated even before the Rules Committee got a hold of it. This time is different, because there is complete partisanship around this. The Judiciary Committee, the Republicans certainly don't have any interest in signing on to anything really that the Democrats want to propose. So, you know, this will be a full-fledged debate in every sense.
Talking to Eric Giordano, political scientist at UW College's, founding director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, looking at the latest in the impeachment process today, the House Rules Committee setting up the rules for how a debate would proceed leading up to a vote. I want to give a listen to Democrat Jamie Raskin sitting in today for Judiciary Chair Gerald Nadler, defending the process that Democrats have undertaken so far.
I've seen lots of fairness in this process. I've seen in the closed door depositions, I saw the Democratic counsel get an hour. I saw the Republican counsel get an hour. I saw the Democratic members get to question. I saw the Republican members get to question. I have seen this committee bend over backwards to get all of the depositions out as quickly as possible, while the President of the United States is stopping at least seven witnesses from coming forward.
And meanwhile, Republicans say there hasn't been enough due process, enough on the president's side here. They say some of their witnesses haven't come before committees either. What do you make of this part of the argument?
Well, this is really probably for me the most fascinating part of the Rules Committee hearing that we're listening to today. Both sides really have a point. The Republicans are arguing that the process was not fair. And to be fair to them, the Judiciary Committee did not allow what is normally called for in one of their House rules for a day of minority testimony. So in other words, the Republicans in the House were shut out from being allowed to choose witnesses that they could call, you know, that would testify for those hearings. In fact, they ultimately only got one witness that was any at all reasonably favorable to them. That was one of the constitutional scholars that testified. And so they are kind of claiming by rule that they should have had this day, or at least a negotiation with the chairman about this. And it turns out that in the Rules Committee, one thing we're hearing today is that they're right, that the Rules Committee are actually saying, you know, you're right, that wasn't followed exactly correctly, and we do need to give you that day of testimony. And the Republicans are saying, that's great, all well and good, but it's going to happen after the articles of impeachment are voted on, and that isn't fair. So they do have a point here. On the other hand, one thing that Republicans aren't saying are not emphasizing anyway, is that the president did have an opportunity to appear before the committee or to send people representing him before the committee, and they have completely stonewalled that Judiciary Committee. And so, you know, both sides have really something to say about this.
We also heard from Judiciary Committee Ranking Member Doug Collins, Republican, testifying in the hearing. Here's a listen to him talk about a problem he's had with the process.
This is all about a clock and a calendar. It has been for a while. Since January, when we were sworn in, it's about a clock and a calendar. Why do I say that? Because we had to get to it by the end of the year, because if we went into the next year, it would be really too close, especially from the House's perspective, to the elections that they're trying to interfere with. And yes, they're trying to interfere with elections, the 2020 election.
What do you make of that argument, Eric? Because you could make a case that Democrats would want this to drag on well into 2020 if they're hoping to interfere with elections. What do you make of that argument from Ranking Member Collins?
Well, you know, there's been some surprising agreement in this Rules Committee hearing today around the issue of the pressures that the Democrats have faced around trying to get these articles of impeachment before, you know, a true House vote. And, you know, and that's been acknowledged by the Democratic leaders of the Judiciary Committee. And that maybe that sounds surprising to everybody, but, you know, there is some pressure. There has been some pressure, you know, to get this done. Now, why? Well, they want to make sure that it happens in a timely way. And also they feel, at least this is what has been argued, that this matter is an ongoing matter. In other words, the president, they believe, the Democrats, was trying to influence the outcome of the 2020 election by trying to get President Zelensky from Ukraine to basically do an investigation of Biden, which would essentially affect the Biden campaign and perhaps the election itself. So they feel like getting this resolved earlier is important to allowing a fair election. At least that is what they're saying in their rhetoric. One could also argue that they know that by getting this done now, they also will push off until the new year a Senate trial. And of course, that is in the middle of primary season. So the beginning of primary season. So this really will have an impact on the campaign one way or the other.
Now, speaking of things still going on, the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, has been back to Ukraine in the last week or so, and he's speaking in the media talking about how he had helped oust the ambassador to Ukraine. And some people critical of the president are saying, wait, we're accusing the president of doing this stuff, and the stuff is still going on while we're doing this impeachment process.
Yeah, this is really remarkable, Rob. I don't even know what to make of this, and I'm just happening to speak personally. It seems as if Rudy Giuliani is the president's worst advocate, and yet they seem to have this incredibly symbiotic relationship where they both appreciate what each other are doing, and the president seemed to appreciate the fact that Giuliani is going out there and still trying to, you know, dig up dirt in a way against the Democrats. And it really, though, he's adding fuel to the fire. And I have to believe that the Republicans behind the scenes are just wishing that Rudy Giuliani would go away or just be quiet for a little while. But apparently that's not going to happen.
And some Democrats outside of Congress are critical of the impeachment process for moving quickly, with Giuliani maybe adding more fuel to the fire. And then his associates, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, under arrest. Lev Parnas apparently willing to talk about his relationship with Giuliani and other Republicans. Some Democrats saying, slow it down. We've got more information that may come out here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, some are waiting for this other shoe to drop. I mean, this revelation that one of these Ukrainian hatchet guys had received money from the Russians. I mean, it's a pretty scurrilous sounding sort of set of events, and they think there could be something out there. Of course, they're also waiting for, you know, the big shoe to drop, which is someday perhaps getting the Donald Trump's tax returns. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there, and I think it was interesting to hear Representative Collins today testifying before the Judiciary Committee. He's a Republican, and of course, he was the ranking member of the Judiciary, and he was saying, look, you know, the reports are already out there that the Democrats are, you know, ready for impeachment round two. So they could actually, you know, instigate another set of articles of impeachment down the road. And so some Democrats have said, look, we should slow it down and really put it all together into one package. of course, the whole election thing is getting in the way, and the timing and the appearances of whether this is a partisan witch hunt or if this is a solemn duty of the Congress. These are all threads that are sort of influencing this decision and the timing of it.
We're talking to Eric Giordano, Associate Professor of Political Science for the UW Colleges, looking at where things stand ahead of a vote on impeachment in the U.S. House tomorrow. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see the House approve these articles of impeachment against the president? Do you want to see that happen tomorrow or soon? Do you think the inquiry process was a fair one? What do you think the next last few months say about our country politically? What do you want to see happen in the Senate? What questions do you have for our guest about the process? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Eric Giordano, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW Colleges, looking at the latest in the impeachment process. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want the House to vote to impeach President Trump tomorrow or shortly thereafter? If they do, what do you want to happen in the Senate? Are you hoping that the Senate would remove the president from office if impeachment comes their way? What do you want to hear that you haven't heard so far when it comes to witnesses and testimony? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Ken is with us in Libertyville, Illinois. Ken, hello.
Yeah, hi. Sorry to do a bit of a callback, but I had a question for your guest. Saying that the Republicans, you know, didn't have a chance to call any witnesses during the inquiry, I thought that both Morrison and Volcker were both on the Republican witness list, and maybe the Democrats were also interested in calling them, but I could have sworn that those two guys were somebody that the Republicans wanted to interview. And then super briefly, I know there's this other Republican talking point that the president has claimed executive privilege and that he, it needs to wind its way through the courts before Democrats can charge anything like obstruction of Congress. And the question is, I thought that during the Nixon impeachment, there was extremely expedited, Supreme Court decision that says, no, you can't claim privilege on these documents or witnesses. And I was wondering why that kind of expedited determination can't be made this time around.
Ken, thanks for the call. To that first point, I think I could split that hair. You were talking, Eric, about the House Judiciary Committee not having those kind of witnesses. The witnesses Ken was talking about were before the House Intelligence Committee in that earlier stage. But to Ken's second point, why couldn't we have had a quick judicial process to get those witnesses and documents that Democrats were looking for that the White House didn't want to come before Congress?
Right. Well, I suppose we could, right? I mean, that's completely in the hands of the Supreme Court, and there is a way to have that expedited, but that's really up to the court. And so, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, everyone is really anxious to see how the court is going to respond, both, to these sorts of executive privileges concerns, the tax issues of whether the president's tax return should be allowed. I mean, there are a lot of very important decisions that are facing the Supreme Court around separation of powers. I mean, things that could literally be groundbreaking or at least clarifying to our constitutional norms. And it would seem in the case of an impeachment perhaps and trial that perhaps that could be expedited. But, it doesn't seem like the court is going to do that. And frankly, that's maybe one of the criticisms from multiple angles of why this process shouldn't be rushed, that perhaps that there should be time given for the court to rule on these sorts of things. But here, going back to something that was said, talked about earlier, why now? Why are they pushing for this? Well, Nancy Pelosi, this might shock some people to hear this, is somewhat conservative relative to her colleagues who have been pushing for impeachment for quite some time. She didn't want to do this. I think it's because she understands that there could be some ramifications for the election, both for the presidential election, for the midterm elections coming. I'm sorry, for the congressional elections coming up. And, she would like to get this wrapped up in time so that it will have perhaps less effect because she doesn't know. I mean, there are some, suggestions out there that proceeding with impeachment could actually hurt the Democrats' chances. And so there's a lot of issues going here. But to your caller's point, it's really up to the court to decide.
So we're going to another caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi. Jeff, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I wanted to say that one of the things that concerns me, we elected a Republican congressman up here, and Congressman Duffy resigned, and it saddens a lot of us up here that we don't have a Republican voting no on this impeachment or being a vocal supporter of Trump, because Trump also won Wisconsin. So it's just something that we think about up here in northern Wisconsin.
Jeff, thanks for the call. You had empty seat after Sean Duffy resigned. It won't affect the outcome probably, though, Eric.
Yeah, it won't. And I understand. I mean, I'm a resident of that district as well. And it's tough, you know, when you don't feel like you're being represented. And of course, when you feel that the former representative would have, you know, supported your viewpoint. Yeah, I think a lot of people wish that maybe he had, you know, extended that term out until the reelection. But, you know, it's hard to question, you know, he had some personal reasons and for resigning. And so, you know, but you're right, Rob. I mean, it's not going to affect the vote. It's not going to, in the long term, affect this process at all.
But the House of Representatives is there to represent. And yeah, you and Jeff are currently, I guess, unrepresented in Congress, it sounds like.
Right.
Jeff,
basically, yes.
Thanks a lot for the call. We're talking to Eric Giordano from UW Colleges, founding director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. We're talking about the latest in the impeachment process. Back to your calls now. Travis is with us in Waukesha. Travis, hi.
Yeah, hi. So when I was at work a lot, I was able to actually listen to a lot of the hearings, or at least some of the hearings, and I just felt like, and I mean, I fit kind of in the middle in the political scale, and in the side of things, it just seemed like there was a lot of personal opinions that were being shared rather than just like facts about, you know, what had happened. It was a lot of, you know, I think that he did this wrong. In my opinion, this is wrong. And it wasn't like, you know, there was a solid, you know, he did blank and this is why it's illegal. And could your guest kind of share a little more about how that could be impeachable in this case?
Travis, thanks for the call. And this is at the heart of the arguments between Democrats and Republicans on both committees, all three committees now, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, your caller makes a great point. I mean, and if you're a Republican and you're listening to their arguments, it is essentially that point. It's, you know, whether he did something that might be unseemly or, you know, something different and we haven't seen, and whether you like his style or you don't. You know, is there a crime? Did he commit a crime? And in the articles of impeachment, there is actually no mention of a specific crime. And although there is mention of bribery and corruption, you know, in the Schiff report and so forth, that's kind of the basis for the Republicans' argument. Now, the Democrats say that that's not necessarily the only thing that rises to the level of impeachable offense. For example, it's not just a crime, they say, but it's a pattern of abusive behavior. And because impeachment is a political process inherently, there doesn't actually have to be a named crime. But, you know, they have said that they're accusing him of soliciting the interference of a foreign government in the 2020 election. That benefits the Trump election and damages the prospects of his political opponent. They have said that his purposes and intent have been corrupt. And I think your caller's right that there is definitely some speculation. And look, all you have to do is look at the transcript that everybody's talking about, this, you know, the famous Zelensky phone call transcript, where the Democrats and everybody who supports that view are saying it's so clear that he is, you know, trying to create coercion or of a quid pro quo to get something in return for the withholding of the funds or the release of those funds. And then, of course, if you listen to the Republicans, it's exactly the opposite. It's, you know, we don't hear any crime there. We don't hear anything specific. And it really just comes down to an interpretation. And that's part of the dilemma is they sort of are both so extreme in forcing us to take a side on this.
Eric, very briefly as we wrap up, when we look back on this, however comes out in a couple of years, do you see the partisan divide easing up or maybe growing through after this process?
Oh, gosh, Rob, you know, I take some students to Washington, D.C. every year. And one of the phrases that we always tell them is, you know, remain skeptical, not cynical. But I will tell you, it is so hard today not to be cynical and not to wonder, you know, how this is going to impact us going forward. I just don't see a let up in this partisan divide. And I mean, you just look at the American public and how we're feeling about this impeachment process. I mean, it's amazing how evenly divided we are roughly on this, especially, you know, it's like 86% of Democrats feel that, you know, that President Trump should be impeached or removed from office, and 87% of Republicans feel exactly the opposite. I mean, we really are in a divided society, and I think it's going to continue.
Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Eric Giordano from UW College's founding director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, looking at the latest in impeachment. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, we'll check out a Christmas light display in Wauwatosa that lets you take remote control of the decorations. That and more coming up tomorrow on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Tomorrow at 7:30, Kate talks to the chancellor at UW-Eau Claire about recent racist messages on social media in the campus community and how the university is responding. That's tomorrow at 7:30 on The Morning Show. Up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then we're joined by two librarians who tell us their favorite young adult reads of 2019. You can share your favorites and get some ideas right now over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.